You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Welcome to the Big Suey, a podcast exclusive.
Risky move.
Just when you thought the show could not be more diluted.
Walk the plank.
Bam.
No more free Disney trips.
Now here's the marching band of nowhere.
Matey.
Fat face.
Dan's been stress eating.
And the habitual liar.
Stugatz can't be trusted.
The Big Suey.
Yo ho, yo ho, a pirate radio life for me.
He was my favorite player. I know Dwayne might not like that so much on those Miami Heat teams because Chris Bosh was always somebody who was superhuman, vulnerable, honest, accessible, professional.
I think Dwayne's going to be fine. He has enough people who, you know, they're his favorite player.
That's fine.
You know?
Let Bosh have some, okay? I chose a bit of an underdog here, but it's because he treated everyone with grace under what were some hostile circumstances, and he's got Letters to a Young Athlete. He's a new book. He's a big reader, and he's got a new book. It's available now. I'm interested in all his thoughts on just everything that went into writing this, because I imagine in some ways you were writing this to yourself as a young man who didn't know very much about what it is that he was headed into before your career took off. So thank you for joining us, Chris. And I guess the first question would be, why did you decide to do this?
Well, I mean, it just kind of naturally happened, believe it or not. Now, over the course, this is like over the course of 5 years, from not being in the NBA to having a book, and, you know, 3-year process from having the idea, you know, it was difficult not playing anymore. You know, my feelings were hurt, my soul and my pride, you know. It was pretty much a crisis I was going through. And one of the things that helped me out tremendously was writing. I had always been a writer, you know, just writing stuff down, you know, whether it was on note cards in my computer, English class, my teacher used to try to get me to write more papers. I didn't, you know, back in high school, it was something I just didn't like. And so I needed something else to kind of dive into and focus on after the game. And so I just started doing that, and it didn't make any sense. I didn't say, oh, I'm gonna write a book. You know, it was like, oh, let me just get this off my mind. You know, I'm gonna do these morning pages every morning and just commit to it. I drop off my son at school, you know, and wave to everybody in the carpool line, and then, you know, get to writing. And that was pretty much my routine for a year and a half, 2 years. And so, you know, just slowly but surely, I started to see kind of these lessons and started being appreciative for my situation and what I came from and what I came through. And I wanted to help other people to hopefully give them something that they could take for themselves.
So it's a combination of therapy. I don't know which one it's more of. Is it therapy, or is it that you badly needed the discipline because you all of a sudden had gone from a very disciplined, structured life to the most sudden of retirements? It's hard enough when you know it's coming. Yeah. It's hard enough to let go. It's downright cruel the way that it happened to you.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of both. It was kind of structure and therapy. And that's funny you say that. I realized how much of my life was structured. And, you know, that was like a tough thing to deal with. Like, I'm just in real life and there's no schedule. Nobody is telling me what I need to do. As a matter of fact, more people are asking me what to do, you know, and that was just a totally different situation for me. You know, I started appreciating that 9:30 bus and that 10:45 shoot around and the 7:30 game. You know, that's what I was used to. So in the writing part, I started structuring my time for that. So that's where the discipline, you know, started. I said, okay, all right, I'm going to do this. I know that I need something because I'm just kind of floating. I feel like I'm floating. So just at least for this time, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to stick to it. I'm going to commit to it. And in that, you know, it was, it became a cathartic process. But first I had to get a lot of BS out. You know what I mean? It was a lot of anger, a lot of hurt. And then after I was able to process that, I noticed how often I was thinking about it. So I started, you know, just changing my mental frame and, you know, just started really thinking about other facets of the game and how far, really my whole story in basketball. And, you know, that's what I came to.
Chris, can you take us to that time right after retirement? What were you going through? What were some of the things you were thinking?
Man, I was still trying to get back into the league. All of my energy was being put towards getting back in basketball. And, you know, we were doing some testing with medicine and stuff. So I was pretty much a human guinea pig for about a year. I was taking myself through tests, trying to find out a way to play. And it just, you know, it became doctor's office after doctor's office. And this is after I was released from the Heat. You know, I just got tired of it. And it just became too much of a burden. And I remember I was getting the shot one day and it hurt so bad. And it's like 5:30 in the morning. I'm testing this regimen just to see if it will work, just to get the data. And they shoot me with the medicine and it hurts so bad. And I said, man, I don't know how long I can do this. Right. And then that's when I kind of started realizing, like, you know, the fight started leaving and I started to become, you know, aware of how, you know, just my reality. And, you know, I had to pivot.
What kind of side effects came with being a guinea pig?
Nothing bad. Just being tired. Not knowing, being unsure. And it was just me continuing. I mean, I didn't leave a stone unturned. I will say that. That's what it makes me happy. There are no what ifs about it. We tried to play basketball. It just didn't work out. And, you know, there was nothing extreme or anything that happened like that. But, you know, just the commitment that it took, you know, getting up at 4:30 to, you know, get to the doctor's office by 5:30 so I could be at the gym by 6:30. And then who knows if I'm going to play again. You know, that became very tiring.
I did some reporting and I don't know which parts of this are true, but I assume that part of your anger came from you had a doctor who had cleared you, right? You thought that you were ready to play again, even though the liability issues were such that everybody was scared of, well, we can't have Chris Bosh dying on the court.
Yeah. So what a lot of people, you know, don't realize is that, you know, I had a sore calf. So I was being proactive because, you know, in my research, I know that you could have a blood clot in a sore muscle. So I was freaking out because I was in the hospital less than a year for that same situation. We're going in all-star break. I'm feeling a little bit of pain. So I did the right thing and went to the hospital because it's not a blood clot, right? I had a blood clot, but then, you know, I took a CT scan. They saw a blood clot scan they call it. They, you know, see a blood clot. I take a CT scan. Okay. Then I take another one like days later when I get back to Miami and it's gone. So then, you know, you remember that team. I mean, me and Pat talked about this team, you know, not to say that we were going to win a championship, but I really felt we could have competed strongly. And so, you know, I felt the best I'd ever felt. I'm trying to redefine my game. And, you know, it wasn't like a debilitating situation. It was a sore calf. And so, you know, that's pretty much where the frustration mostly led from. And so in that, you know, medicine is crazy. It's, you know, we got into the medicine world and, you know, we started looking for, you know, going through papers, research. I mean, it was a whole thing, man. And so that was where those efforts came from.
When you say you were angry, where did you put that anger? Who were you angry at?
Oh, just the whole situation, you know, just the whole situation. You know, it was just snatched from you. You just feel that it's unfair. Why me? You go through all these things. And in that, you know, this is what I identified myself as and what I do. And, you know, the conversations are very casual. We're like, well, that's it. You know, yeah, I guess that's it. And so, you know, I've worked my whole life to get to this point. And now when I'm, you know, trying to sustain that level, actually get back to the mountaintop like we were before, this situation is happening. So you just, you know, you're mad and frustrated at everything. But, you know, it's a part of life, I suppose. And, you know, you have to get over those things. I eventually had to understand where I was and that I was grieving. And then, you know, once you recognize that, you can move from there.
Did you get much help in terms of mental health experts with navigating some of this stuff? Because I don't know when and how all of that anger and hurt and grieving thaw into gratitude where you can look back and be like, holy shit, what an amazing life. What an amazing thing that yeah. I achieved, because you're greedy and gluttonous as an athlete. You want to keep winning championships, keep getting more, and then you get it stripped away. When did it become gratitude?
It took a while, but like I was saying, taking my son to school every day. My twin boys were just born. So I was getting like, this is right when I got the news, my babies came the next month, you know, and I've got two new babies. Now I've got five and the house is a little bit bigger. And you know, those were the things that really ended up being helpful for me because I had to keep it together. You know, I couldn't just, as hard as things got, I had to continue to, you know, be a husband and a father. And, you know, you have those sessions getting things. That's why you have friends, right? Getting things off your chest and you know, talking about it. But I eventually just was able to take pieces from, you know, many conversations that I had. And, you know, it ended up helping me out. And one in particular conversation, you know, I won't say who, but, you know, we were talking and I said, man, you know, this is not fair. And, you know, going through that whole thing. And I said, it didn't end the way it's supposed to end. And he looked at me and said, yo, nothing ends the way it's supposed to. It never ends the way it's supposed to. And then we got into this whole philosophical conversation and started going through players and the endings of their careers. You know, so that's like a tough thing to realize, too, is that as an athlete, the world that we live in, you're on top one day and you're not the next. You know, so it's just something that I had to come to a realization.
Chris, the book I want to read, if I'm being honest, is you getting all that shit off your chest. I want to read that book, man.
Yeah, you know, it's a thick one.
I remember when you got to Miami, one of the things, you were so intent on having a family, on being a family man. It was so important to you. How did you manage the minefield of juxtaposing, I'm willing to risk my life to play basketball, even though I am a father and a husband first?
Well, I mean, that's what it came to. And thank goodness I never had to really answer that question. But that's pretty much the paradox that came up every time. Like, okay, that's cool. Well, Chris, you've done it all. What else do you want to do? But no, but there was more, but what else do you want to do? You've got kids and now you have to do this. It's just, you just have to kind of get taken out of that zone. You feel that at the time that that's the most important thing going for you and yourself and your family, but this is how I provide and this is what I do. And, you know, you have to eventually come to the realization you're more than that. You know, I was more than that. I have to be more than that for my family. And, you know, I always wanted kids and I have to be there for them for as long as I can be. So that started to materialize and become more important as I thought about it more and more and more. And as we got more distance in between me playing my last game, you know, I know how this game is, man. And once we started getting into the year, I said, man, here we go. Even if I wanted to play, even if I was healthy, being out the game for a year, usually people do not come back from that. So, you know, you just take it and you take the reality in bites, I suppose. And you know, like I said, I give all credit to my family. You know, they were definitely a great support system for me. And that tremendously helped me to kind of be able to process things and keep my mind on the important things.
How close were you to making it back to the NBA?
I wasn't close. Never got close. In my mind, I was close, but you know, I went to the Lakers facility and I was practicing a few times. I said, "Oh yeah, wouldn't that be cool to link back up with Bron? Maybe." But you know, they didn't. I was liable. I was a liability. You know what I'm saying? Like you say, you don't want Bosh to, you know, drop dead on the court, that is a serious fear that people had, and then I eventually understood. So, you know, I had to come to, I had to come to terms, man.
But in your mind, you were hopeful. The most hopeful that you were about it was that you might be able to reunite with LeBron in Los Angeles.
That's as close as it got. And that was just a thought.
Yeah.
That was me working out a few times and just, you know, being back around the fellas just for a short moment and saying, wow. It wasn't an official workout, by the way. It's just me, you know, me getting in the gym. And, you know, I would go there just to, they would allow me to, you know, get some work in before or after their practices. So, you know, just being in that position, seeing their new facility and all that stuff, I was trying to stay in it and get reconnected and maybe even find a path into the league while I was working out.
I know nothing replaces that. There is no such thing. You have your identity or who you were replaced, and you grieve that with some mourning. But is there anything outside of family that you have found that fills that hole? I don't know if writing the book is that, but just something in your life that comes even close to having that kind of fulfillment in it, the daily challenge of going up against the very best on something you have crafted your entire life.
Man, you know what? Nothing can fill it, and there's nothing wrong with that. I advise athletes, when you're done, don't try to fill it. Don't think that you have to fill it. It's in a box of time, and it'll live. Watch film if you want to relive it, you know? But for the most part, trying to get something to emulate that feeling, I think, you know, in my opinion, that's a mistake. You know, nothing could replace playing basketball in front of 20,000 people a night. You know, I've been to sporting events all over the world. NBA is one of the best shows you'll ever see in the world. You know, so I have helped, it's helped me with other things, you know, doing other things, completely going into being a father, being a husband. I mean, we have a garden around the house. We've got bees, you know, in this situation coming off my kids. You know, they've been, we've been homeschooling them. So we've all been home and trying to, you know, pretty much learning how to coexist as a family and work together as a team in that aspect, you know. And those are the things that have really given me the purpose moving forward. You know, basketball was basketball, and you know, that's in the past for me.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text LOSE to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text LOSE to 200-300. That's LOSE to 200-300. LOSE to 200-300.
You idolized Kevin Garnett growing up. You emulated Kevin Garnett growing up. How mean was he? How cruel was he when you played against him? And how hurtful was it to have him be cruel to you? Because I can't imagine that he was any kind of nice.
He was, he was mean. But, you know, me and Kevin talked about this, too. I talked about it with him after he got enshrined, actually, which was a really cool conversation to have. But, you know, I understood why he did it. At the time, I did not. So my first experience, it was cool up until the time I had a good game. You know what I mean? Like, I had a good game, and I was like 20 or 21, and I had a good game against him, and it got hyped up ever since that day. It was adversarial. And then when he got the Boston, it got worse. That's when it kind of came to a head. And so it was an instance where we got into it and like we're going back and forth and he said some stuff to me and it wasn't, you know, anything disrespectful. It was actually a good one. It was pretty funny. And I couldn't sleep. And I said, man, why did I shouldn't even been talking. Why was I even talking? That's not even what I do. You know, and so that was like a learning point for me. But I understood the reason that he did it because, you know, as a 21-year-old guy asking Kevin to work out during the summertime, you know, he's got to be who he is. And granted, years later down the line, we're squaring up in the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, so I do get why he did it. He just, you know, a super competitive guy. He had his way of playing the game. And once I understood that, I kind of stayed in my lane and I would just be like, yo, I'm not even talking to him. And, you know, we earned each other's respect.
Two things, though. I want the details of that Hall of Fame conversation, but I also want the details of what the hell he said to you that didn't allow you to sleep that night. Like,
oh, he called me a mama's boy.
Oh, no. And you carried that. You carried. Oh, because
it was a good one.
Yeah.
He met my mom. Look, he held on to this for like 2 years because he met my family at All Star in Vegas. You know what I mean? So like, oh man, he said that, and I was having a terrible game, and he dominated me in the last minute. Oh my god, man, I couldn't sleep. Up to days.
All right, give me. Is there another one like that? Do you have many stories like that? Somebody who said something that got you in a soft spot, and you're like thinking to yourself, "This motherfucker knows exactly where to push me."
What?
And I had a bad game, and now I can't sleep.
That? And of course, when they push that button, you got me. But I'm a grown man. Who are you talking to? Oh my god! It became everything about everything else but basketball.
which is exactly what he was trying to do,
yes.
Right? Was
it, oh,
was
yeah, he got me. He got me.
He didn't sleep, Dan.
Couldn't sleep, man. And then it's just like, why did I even do that? And it bothered me for months.
So what was the Hall of Fame conversation like? It wasn't necessarily an apology because that's who he was. He was cutthroat, and what was that like?
Oh, just laughing about it. We laughed about it. I told him, you know, just you know, pretty much just coming full circle. Just like, man, I wanted to be just like you. And you remember, we were in LA at Midsummer Night's Magic. Do you remember when I came up to you and asked you to work out? He said, oh, hell yeah, I remember that. No way I was going to let you work out with me. See all my moves? And then we, you know, got into the debate of the current NBA and all that stuff. Nothing crazy, you know, just lightly, but you know, more so saying like, yeah, this is how. But then C Webb was there too, and they were, you know, they weren't friends on the court either. And you know, it was funny, you know, C Webb said he told Kevin like, yo, we could be friends after we're done playing, but right now, no. But it was cool because I'm cut from that same cloth. You know, you had to be aggressive growing up playing in Dallas. And I had those type of coaches to where they did not want you fraternizing with the other team. So like it made it easy. It made it easier for me because I knew if I'm playing Kevin tonight, it's going to be hard. But he did remember that conversation. And, you know, that was the reason he told me. He said, yeah, I knew you were going to be pretty good. I had heard about you. And it was no way I could let you, you know, you're going to be able to take advantage of me and see what I can and can't do if we work out together.
Was that the first time, that Hall of Fame conversation, that Kevin Garnett learned you didn't sleep that night?
Yep.
He must have loved that. So funny, you know? That must have been better for him than getting into the Hall of Fame.
We laughed so hard. We laughed so hard, man. It was just a good time, and you know, just to be able to tell those stories with a smile. I mean, it's you know, because everybody wants to win. Everybody is out there to be a competitor and do the most that they can. And for me to have that conversation with KG and C-Web, like, those were the dudes, you know? So it was just an amazing experience.
They seem to hate you, those Celtics, more than you guys hated them, though.
I think there's always a, you know how it is with Boston teams, man. It's always an extra, you know, extra competitive edge, you know? And then even, you know how it was in the way we came together and stuff. Everybody did not appreciate that. So it added to that edge, you know what I mean? And Paul, between Paul and KG, oh my gosh, you could set off a bomb with that competitiveness, man.
What's the what's the worst thing ever said to you by a Celtic fan in that building?
I can't repeat it.
Man.
Jeez. I can't repeat it. Yeah, I can't even repeat it. Something you wouldn't even, I mean, you know, yeah. This has been, the things that we're talking about today, this has been an issue. I'm glad that, you know, the conversation is there, but, oh yeah, and I just don't want to pin it on Boston either. We've played in the playoffs. Think about this. And this is why, you know, it's like hard for me to watch ball some days, because it's like, man, you just want it to be difficult for everybody. In our thing, we went to, and this is in the playoffs. This is where we played in the playoffs. Boston, Philly, New York, Indiana, Brooklyn. Man, come on, man. These are the toughest places to play. I want people to have it tough, you know? But yeah, we've heard some atrocious things.
Can you tell me now, after all of these years, the statute of limitations is up on this stuff, the culture of the Heat was competitive, everybody gets into everybody's face, Pat Riley didn't mind if Alonzo Mourning told him to f*** off as long as he learned something, you with Dwayne, with LeBron, the tensest that it was, a situation that presented itself that sort of tested you guys, what do you think of when I ask that question?
Oh, man, there's so many. I forgot Chicago, by the way. Who can forget Chicago?
Right.
There was a moment, we had a 5-game losing streak late in the season. I believe it was the first year, and we had the game in the bag and we blew it. That was pretty tough. I'm trying to think of another one. Well, it wasn't tough. We were just ready for the playoffs in the back-to-back year. It was that one space in that back-to-back year where after the incredible run, we went 500 for the end of the season. That was a little tough, but once we got back to playoff basketball, it was good. It was more so in that first year, I believe.
Who was crying in the locker room after that Bulls loss, that 5-game losing streak? Who was crying?
I can't tell you that. That's a secret.
that's how
somebody's smart enough to wait for the cameras to go away before they start it. Not me. Everybody knew I cried.
That was difficult, though, right? You had no idea. I remember one of the many smart things that you said is you had no idea the sacrifice you're making until you make it. When you came introduced on that stage, you guys thought that was going to be a 10-year thing.
Yeah, we did. You know, we did. We thought we were going to run the table. You could hear, by the way, you know, you have to have swagger as a team and as an individual to get something done. So we had the swagger. It's just we weren't familiar with how painful it would be, you know, living out these things in public and, you know, trying to aspire to do those things. And it's like, oh, okay, this is what Kobe and Shaq went through. This is what MJ went through. If you want to go for the crown, okay, I got it. I got to get tough and we've got to, you know, we have to figure it out and make this thing work if we want to do it.
11-time All-Star, 2-time NBA champion, Olympic gold medalist. You should check out his new book, Letters to a Young Athlete, if you want to get a little bit closer to an athlete who is comfortable being vulnerable. He just told you. Kevin Garnett called him a mama's boy, and he couldn't sleep for days. I do want the angry book, though, too. I want thing. It's not even a chapter. Just give us something on your way out here. Give us something from the book of
maybe,
anger.
Maybe one day. Maybe one day when I'm older, I'm like, you know what?
Yep.
It's time.
Get shit off my chest.
See you later, Chris. Thank you for being on.
Thank you, guys.
We appreciate it.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.